Please remember, the views and opinions expressed by this show or any other show on DV Radio and its guests are strictly those of said individuals and do not reflect those of the DV Radio staff, nor the staff of Dysfunctional Veterans.
Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog. I hope you're tuning in to listen to enlightening, educational, and informative conversations about life with service dogs and the Americans with Disabilities Act. Thank you for tuning in to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. Hello and welcome to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog. I'm your host, Joaquin Watai, author of the book PTS Dog, Post-Traumatic Stress Disorder and the Service Dog, which is now available anywhere online that you can buy books in both hardback and EPUB format. So check it out. And, you know, if you haven't read the book by now, what are you waiting for? It's very, very informative, gives you a lot of information about the law, and it talks to you about the experience of veterans who handle PTSD service dogs and how the dogs and the law have affected their lives. Want to let you guys know this is the last version of the Service Dog Show in this format. In order to try and breathe a little fresh life into the program, I have hired a co-host, and we're going to start recording here shortly. And we will make some announcements about who it is and what we're going to do in the near future. So stay tuned for that. We will be retooling a little bit of things with the show, new theme music, and all of that good stuff. Today on the Service Dog Show, I have John Jacobs and Kaylin Pendleton from the Jaeger Foundation. Gentlemen, thank you very much for joining me.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks for having us.
And the audience doesn't know about it, but we already tried to record this once, and we had some technical difficulties. But, Don, I want to talk to you, first of all. How did this idea come about? How did the Jaeger Foundation come about?
So I went into my own endeavor to procure a service dog for myself. And I ran into a bunch of red tape with the different programs out there helping me pay for it. I had already found a dog that I had paired with well, and I had found a local veteran-run dog training business that I felt it was important to support in my endeavor. And all the programs, you had to use their dogs or their trainers, and the waiting list was astronomical, you know, years. So out of that, the Jaeger Foundation was born in that we wanted to get service dogs in the hands of veterans with as little red tape as possible.
And by red tape, what do you mean?
So with the fact that I had already paired with a dog and I had already found a veteran-owned business trainer that I wanted to use, I was disqualified from those programs on the fact that I had to use their dog or their trainer.
And even like when you go into looking at the programs themselves, even if he hadn't had a dog selected, he was looking at 8 months to a year and travel and everything. To actually get a dog.
Yeah. And that is definitely a challenge. And by the way, that was Kaylin, who is the vice president of the Jaeger Foundation and also a dog trainer. So one thing that John mentioned was that he had found a dog that he was bonded with. And anybody who listens to the show knows that I'm a huge proponent of the bond that we form with our service dogs. And especially in the case of a PTSD service dog, everything that we do together is 100% built on the foundation of the bond that I have with my service dog. Talk to me a little bit about why that's important and how you guys want to foster that bond.
Well, coming at it from my end, I just, you know, after 11 years of Air Force and at least 9 of that being a canine unit in the military, deploying Secret Service missions, we do a lot of detection and everything, and that comes down to relationship. First time we touch a dog, I mean, we're not giving it commands; we're spending time with them. We're not expected to do the obedience and all the high level work without a bond. So it really comes down to if it's true for police dogs or military dogs or sport or whatever you're into, why wouldn't it be true for service dogs? And even more so with service dogs, in my opinion, because everything is so much more finite when it comes to behavior. Everything lies in behavior with dogs, everything. And they're learning through behavior to respond to stimulus. When it comes to post-traumatic stress, they're having to have a high level focus to learn the behavior, of a certain individual's baseline. And when they're okay and when they're not okay. And the only way you do that is through time and relationship and bonding. And that's just, I mean, that's, there's no other way around that.
I couldn't agree more. One of the questions I've asked since I began the PTS Dog Project was, how is it that a third party can train a dog to respond to my issues? You know, if the dog doesn't know me, the dog can't respond proactively to what's going on in my head. Whereas if the dog and I, for lack of a better way to phrase it, grow up together, form that bond, you know, that dog knows, oh, dad's starting to get worked up. You know, dad's starting to get stressed. That, you know, something's wrong. And that dog then starts to respond to that. And that natural response is what you build on to create the tasks that the dog performs, alerts, and things like that, to assist with your disability. And that's something that I think that the industry, for lack of a better term, has missed. And I want to talk a little bit about that. Service dog training has become an industry. You guys want to change the industry. Tell me about that.
I want to, you know, as you can call it a conflict of interest, or you can call it whatever you want, but I'm on both sides of this fence because I've got my own business. You know, I've got my own dog training business where I do sport work, basic obedience, you know, all the way up to service dog work, and then puppy work and stuff. So I'm on the side that understands that my time is worth something, you know, and I've got bills to pay and I've got a life to live and everything. But on the other side, I know I don't have a service dog because I don't need one, and I'm going to pretend I do. But I understand people like our president John, who are, you know, what you would consider the laymen of the world of know they need something and are taking the enormous step to say, hey, I need help, and this is how I feel like I can be helped, which is a huge deal, anyways. And I don't think they should be taken advantage of. And I feel like that's what's happening because they're seeing a need. And it kind of, I mean, it's a business thing. I get it. They're seeing a need and, you know, supply and demand, right? They're going that with running with it. And I get the concept, but it's misguided in this instance that it shouldn't be happening to this area. And I want to stop it. Because I feel like it can be helped and it can be redirected because it is big and it's gotten bigger, but it's not so big that we can't pull it back, in my opinion.
And one of the other things with that is that our aim with the Jaeger Foundation is to be an advocate for the vet, because there are so many companies out there that will take advantage of that vet. We will look into that and make sure they're not charging an astronomical amount of money or making unreasonable demands of the vet.
Mm-hmm. Well, and another, you know, another concern that I've run across frequently is the, for lack of a better term, the dog and pony show. You know, this such and such foundation or such and such service dog, you know, has, you know, we provide all these service dogs for vets, and you go and look at their website and they're parading these veterans around and using them. There's and sob stories, basically, right, for advertisement. And
yep.
I don't know about you, John, but I know when I first started training my service dog, you couldn't put me in front of a camera. I couldn't handle that.
And oh man, you talk to John right now about how hard it is to get him to do a video for the Jaeger Foundation. Oh man, I have pushed this kid so far out of his comfort zone, it's ridiculous.
But I mean, look what I'm doing, you know? 10 years ago, before I had Skeeter, we wouldn't be having any conversations. I don't know you, you know? I mean, it's the independence and the return to a different ability that a service dog gives to a disabled person is huge. And we're able to start growing, and in spite of the disability, in spite of the restrictions that especially something like PTSD puts on us, we're finding ways to get out. And the bridge that we use to get there is the service dog.
Absolutely.
I am 100% with that. And this kind of comes down to my entire philosophy with the service dog is confidence. Mm-hmm. The dog has to have confidence. And when we evaluate dogs before they're ever trained, we're looking at that. We're looking, people will try and name it different things, the environmental stability and you know, reactive and all that good stuff. You can throw any term you want out there, but really what it comes down to is confidence. Confidence in you, confidence in itself, and confidence in the position that they're in. And you know, you have your genetics will get you so far with a dog, but then at some point when that dog is trained to be confident in their tasks and abilities, which, you know, let's be real, all of us trainers, our job is to train that high level of obedience, confidence, and as many and exposure into many areas. But that dog's job is to give you confidence, and you feed off each other. You know, it's not just the dog giving it to you all the time. It really isn't. It's a team concept, and you're feeding confidence off of each other. And that's why part of my job is to, when I sit down with people like John and another veteran I just sat down with about a week ago to find him a dog is okay, where are you not confident? And what happens when that confidence hits the floor? You know, what happens? Do you shake? Does your knee shake? Do you breathe heavy? You know, I just try and get as much information. And I even have their spouse there to get the information from them because they're a second set of eyes. You know, there's certain things that I do that I don't even know I do. So I want to know those things. And in order to know them, I have to be able to train those things into the dog for them to recognize them at the most obvious level, you know. And when the dog starts recognize those things in the most minute communication standards of just very, very little heavy breathing to even epileptic type stuff, that comes with time and a bond. And that kind of goes to your whole point and your whole premise to this entire thing is a bond that's created from as early as possible. You know, if it's a puppy, that's the best bet.
Absolutely agree. But I want to make sure now John and I talked extensively yesterday. The reason you guys are on the show is the way I approach it when an organization comes to me and says, hey, you know, we want to be on your show. We want you to help us, you know, get out there is exactly what I said. Skeeter's nine, almost nine. It's time to really start thinking about his retirement and his successor. So I want you to sell me on how you can help me do that. Because if you can't, I can't recommend you to another veteran because I don't want to set them up for failure. And so I ask hard questions, and you guys are hitting all the right notes because you're really talking about getting a dog to the veteran so that they can begin the bond, because that bond is what it takes to train the dog and the veteran together in order to be a successful team. And I can't, you know, I named it because there's no real name for it. I call it cooperative training. Me and my dog mm-hmm. training classes, but at the end of the day, I'm responsible to practice with my dog, you know, every day. If we go to once a week or twice a week,
absolutely.
What happens on the other 5 days of the week, you know, that's my responsibility. And I start building skills as the handler to handle my dog. My dog and I begin to become confident in each other, that confidence. And that's, you know, that's a key point right there is that confidence. Look, if you're a nervous, jumpy, jittery person, the last thing you need is a nervous, jumpy, jittery dog.
Exactly.
You just feed off each other and build. And this is where behavior problems come. Look, I have nothing against Chihuahuas. They're great dogs for the people who they're great dogs for. But if, you know, they're also one of the most nervous and jittery dogs I've ever seen. You know, mm-hmm. So you want to give somebody who's nervous and jittery because of PTSD a dog that's nervous and jittery. You just both feed off each other and get worse. And this is where we get all these stories of these really poorly behaved dogs.
Yep.
Not necessarily just a Chihuahua, you know, but a Chihuahua is a perfect example. And it has nothing to do with size. They're just, it's just,
and that's a conversation.
Go ahead, John.
That's a conversation Kaylin and I had at the very, very beginning of all this. Is I recognize that part of my PTSD is I tend to feed off the energies around me. Part of that military mindset is matching aggression with aggression, matching those energies. So if I have a dog that's high strung and all over the place, I'm going to be high strung and all over the place. So one of the first things is I told him is I need a dog that's calm.
Yep. That's why I chose a Malamute. A well-trained Malamute is confident, is collected and calm. I mean, this dog's so mellow, it's not even funny. And that,
but see, and here comes an issue that I have when you start talking to trainers about it, right? Because you two are going to have, you're going to do your own homework, right? I can tell that about you. And John's extremely thorough with his homework now, and he's also really good at asking questions about things he just does not know. He doesn't pretend he doesn't, right? That's one reason why I like working with people that don't necessarily train dogs, because I'm not fighting through what they think they know. But at the same time, you're gonna be there's people out there, I guarantee you've heard it. Like, I cannot believe you use a Malamute for a service dog. That is not what I would use, you know. There's exceptions to every breed, right? There's not a lot of Malinois out there as service dogs. There really isn't. But John's got one of them, you know, because Jaeger was just that dude. He was that dude that just said, "Hey man, let's go." You know, I'm cool. You're cool. Well, I'm cool. You know, and it just happens. So you gotta go. You gotta go case by case too. And there's no better barometer for that than the handler. You know.
Yeah. And that's something that I think is really, really important to emphasize. Is yeah, okay. I grew up in Alaska. I grew up around Malamutes. I knew what I was getting into when I decided to train a Malamute. I knew what I was in for. I understand their drives, you know. I mean, I used to mush them, right? So I had a lot of confidence in the breed of dog, but Skeeter is one in a billion. This specific dog is just the right dog. And it really came down to finding a dog that matched my needs over the breed. If he had not had he had a brother who was unbelievable, stunning animal, a absolute paragon of the breed. I mean, just ideal and way too high strung to have ever worked out as a service dog for anybody. He was just that big buff alpha. I'm going to take over and run everything male. And he was a great dog, but he could never have been successful. Whereas Skeeter knows he's great, knows he's awesome, knows he's number one and doesn't care. You know, he's confident. Yep. But he's not an asshole about it, you know?
Yeah. Totally.
You know? And that's just it. If a Chihuahua had had the right personality, I'd have a Chihuahua, you know?
Right. Yeah. I mean, it kind of comes to, it's funny because case in point, a week ago, I met this veteran. He's an Army Air Cav veteran. In bad shape, you know. When I sit there and talk to him, you can see it, you know. But he had already had a service dog for about 5 years. His name was Scout, and he rescued him from a local organization named Pound Buddies, you know. So there you go. I mean, he already trained his own service dog. He got extremely lucky that he had one for 5 years, had to put him down because he got cancer in his leg, incurable, inoperable cancer in his leg. But he came to me for help because he was having a hard time not having one. That's all I did was help him find a dog. You know, I called some people and stuff, and he ended up going to Canada, to a breeder, had a really good price point, and it was about 6 hours away. He went up there and picked one, but he had two, and he asked, and he wanted it. He really wanted a black, an all black German Shepherd. Right. So we found the breeder, asked all the right questions, went up there, and he had two. He had one that was real laid back, and he had one that was real working line, you know, just go, 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 go. And he's like, man, I, the breeder asked him, he's like, hey, do you want the laid back one or the going? And his first instinct was, well, obviously I want the working one, right? Because working lines. And I said, I don't know, man. Go up there and withhold your judgment till you go see them and meet them. And you kind of, I gave him the things to look for because I couldn't go with him. Mm-hmm. But your best bet is going to be the confident laid back one, just because you can attain that focus a little bit easier with a minimal amount of drive, drive working. Right. But I mean, both likely could have worked, but I was going to set them up for success because, and you were talking about, I want you to sell me, on your services and stuff like that in your things, because how I would approach you is different how I approach John, right?
Right.
You come to me for a replacement of your dog. I'm not going to insult your intelligence and tell you, well, I need to train your dog for you, right? Because I know what I'm doing. Well, no, you already know what you're doing, right? You just need help finding the right dog,
Yeah.
Maybe for any one of 100 reasons, maybe your area is tapped out or there's no litters down or you're just running dry in your area. Hey, you need to reach out and you need some better resources to find a dog. That's all I'm going to do. Hey, you know what you're doing? Cool. I'm going to help find you that glove that fits. Versus John was, I had to do that on top of, I needed to help empower and educate him, on what the responsibilities were for a service dog, because you have responsibilities. You're ultimately responsible for your dog. You don't walk around with a service dog entitled, no more than anybody else should feel entitled either.
You hear what this gentleman is saying? You have responsibilities to handle your dog. You don't just walk around entitled. That is absolute man. Message right there. Bing, bing, bing. That's refreshing to hear somebody who helps train service dogs recognize, understand, and say that out loud. A lot of these organizations out here, the big ones, you know who I'm talking about. Oh, well, this means your dog is fully trained. You don't have to worry about it. Guess what? That's wrong. Is if it's in your hand, you hold at the if somebody gets bit, you're responsible, not the
well. Dog. And this is my biggest message to anybody. I don't care what part of the industry you're in. Dogs are animals with free will. Period. Every single time you touch that leash, you're training. So there is no such thing as a fully trained, finished service dog. One, you know as well as I do that there is no national standard test for anybody to sit there and say, my dog's finished, right? Dogs are a constant work. They're constant. If you let them get flabby and lazy, just like we do sitting around on the couch, they will. They take maintenance. They take precursor. They lose focus. Every dog, I don't care how good your dog is, it has its mannerisms and it has its faults. You work through those things, If somebody looks at your dog and says, well, he shouldn't be doing that. Well, he's entitled to his bad day too, right?
Yeah.
Just like I am. But you work through those things. You're a team. It's the whole point. But you as a handler, it is your responsibility to one, maintain that dog's training and understand that, hey, just because we're not in classes anymore and he's doing fine, that he's finished and he should be able to do his job without me telling him all the time. They're imperfect beings just like we are. And basically it comes down to you and the dog holding each other accountable on a daily basis.
That is the concept. I keep telling people, handle your dog. Handling a service dog is a verb. It is an action. It requires involvement. It requires focus. You know how a PTSD service dog works in a public access situation, say like going shopping in Walmart? You're so focused on making sure your dog is on point and keeping your dog in line that you forget, oh my God, I'm in frickin' Walmart.
Yeah.
Oh my God, I said that last week. I don't know if I said it to John or somebody. No, I said it to the other veteran I was working with. I said it to him. I said, one of the biggest reasons why service dog, no, actually it was somebody that called me. Sorry, my brain recalls to me. But they were asking, and she was telling me about her husband's an Army combat veteran. I said, this is more than just the dog being a grounding mechanism whenever you need him to be, right? Mm-hmm. They give you that sense of purpose that you've been missing from the military in the begin with, because you get out, you don't have that time schedule. You don't have that thing that, oh, I have to do it. I've got these troops to lead. I've got these things to ride. I've got all this. No, no, you've got this dog to work. And if you fail, you're failing that dog. And so, yeah, you could, it kind of comes down to, you could give a crap about anything else that's going on right now, because you got to work this dog.
Yeah, it's just, it's a renewal of mission. It's a new vocation. You no longer have the vocation of being a soldier, sailor, airman, or marine, or Coast Guardsman. But now your vocation is as a service dog handler, and that includes training. Every time you pick up the leash, you're training. Absolutely agree. Training never ends. There is no such thing. Every time you go out, you're doing a public access test. Every time.
Yep.
And that brings to mind a phrase that I hear. I'm pretty sure it's one of Kalen's top three most common phrases, but I train the handler just as much as I train the dog.
Ding, 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 ding. Yes. Absolutely.
I don't know if you've seen any of our pictures on our Facebook, but John's really good at posting my "I'm going to kick the shit out of you" faces because he's being stupid. You know, maybe, I mean, me and John, like, he's very good at taking my crap. Because I, again, you know, this is where I fit with a lot with veterans, because I understand and I can talk to them the way they need to be talked to. You know, hey, stupid, stop it. You know, I will throw that Kong at your head. I don't care. You know, I'm not going to be sensitive about it. I mean, how many times have I told you, John? Hey, John, quit being a bitch.
Yep.
I think we're up to 83 times.
You know what? It's just the thing, though, and this is something, folks in the audience, listen. You know what? There are very few quote unquote organizations who I will back 100%. These guys get it. I hope you're realizing that as you're listening to our conversation. These gentlemen get it. They understand that putting the veteran together with the dog, creating that bond, if you can't do that first, you're not going to build a successful team in a timely enough manner to have a positive effect in the life of that veteran. Now, there is a time and a place for third-party trained dogs. I personally don't feel that PTSD is the time and place. I think the veteran absolutely needs to be involved in every step of the training in building that foundation of trust.
Absolutely.
Bond. And then moving forward. John, you have something?
Yeah, I want to talk about the time factor a little bit, which is something that we focus on in the foundation. And this ties in with the 22 veterans a day. My experience personally, because it's the only one I can really speak from, is I was in a bad place when I came to Kalen. And I got to tell you, calling all these different programs and them telling me basically that they can't help me, or that they could help me in a year, I'm sitting here thinking, man, I don't know if I've got a year, you know? And we want to take that factor out of the equation, because we feel like by the time the vet comes to us and gets to that point where they're stepping up and going, hey, I need help, that time is already... That's a ticking time bomb.
Absolutely. Could not agree more. I don't know if you guys know this, but I'm actually personal friends with Bart Sherwood, who's the founder of TADSAW, Train a Dog, Save a Warrior. And he talks about veterans being on the bubble. Like, you imagine a level, right? And right in the middle is you're good to go. You're level. But, you know, when you're dealing with those suicidal thoughts and everything, you start to get off kilter, and the, you know, getting the veteran back on a level first, just getting them level and then moving forward, gets them off of that bubble of about ready to I'm done, that's it, I'm done, you know, and taking their own life. Once you get them off the bubble and start training, then they're moving forward, and that is absolutely the you're exactly right. Look, when I decided that I had to do something different, it was because I had done everything else that the VA threw at me.
Yep.
I was taking all their drugs, and I still wanted to take my own life. I knew exactly how I was going to do it, where I was going to do it. I even knew what gun I was going to use, and I had choices, okay? And something brought me to the point of realization, look, this is not living. These drugs aren't helping. Something needs to change. And the change was a service dog. And my position is my bread skeeter. And so I held him in the palm of my hand the day he was born. And I knew at that right that instant, this is my dog. That's not normal.
Yep.
But it happened to work for me. And here we are, almost 9 years later, and this is my dog. And we have built a team, and it is absolutely, the back and forth, Kaylin, as you said, the teamwork, that you're working together. That saved my life. That, the puppy saved my life. The dog gave me a mission.
And I want to dive into that a little bit. So the difference is that even those of you with families that are having suicidal thoughts, and a lot of times, you go, I can't do this to my family. But sometimes your family, not to sound wrong here or anything, but your family is the reason, because you see your relationships going down the drain and you don't know how to stop it. It's like trying to hold on to water. And you start thinking like maybe they'd just be better off without me.
Well, coming from it from my perspective, because I haven't been down that dark road, right? I haven't, and I'll sit here and be honest. I've been in some bad places, right? And I've been really sad, but I haven't been to that extent. So coming from my side, I have to imagine human people, your family, whether they say or not, like spouses, they react a different way than dogs do. Dogs tend to push forward. Family pulls back because they respond to stimulus a different way, and they may hold grudges and they don't understand. Dogs don't care. They don't care why you're doing it. They don't care. They just said, hey, what's up? What's going on? They don't hold grudges to anything. They let it go. So if you have a bad day, even at the dog, the next day it's nothing. Whereas your family's going to hold a grudge for a little bit. So it's not bad. It's just a different understanding. That's why they're considered that medical apparatus and that psychological apparatus that they are, that your family just, isn't capable of providing. And it's not a knock on the family, because my family gets me through those things, but that may not be the case in some situations.
And it's, the dog, the family, the person, the human, wants to understand why, and you can't,
because we're logical. Dogs aren't.
Yeah, you can't always explain that. The dog doesn't care why. The dog cares that there's something wrong, and the dog wants to do whatever the dog can do to comfort you. And there's a meme I've seen several times, and it's a dog laying on its person, and it says something to the effect that there's nothing more powerful than the love of an animal who thinks that their hugs can make everything better. And that's exactly, that's really, if we could get inside the head of a dog, I honestly believe that the dog thinks, well, you just need love. And that's
right.
And that is exactly what you need. Complete unconditional love.
It's that simple.
Yeah. And that's, and I'm not saying that our families can't give it to us. They can. And a lot of, but you know what, there's other factors and there's other things going on, and there's understanding and intellectual,
But sometimes your family members have their own things they're dealing with, and they're not always capable of taking care of you when they got to take care of themselves.
Exactly. And the dog, you know what the dog expects from you? Take me out when I need to go potty and make sure there's food in my bowl.
Yeah.
That's what happens when you remove logic from it, human logic. That's one of my underlying issues I have with people that have, they treat their dogs like they're like actual kids, because they're not. You're treating them like a human, and they're not. They don't understand that, and you're like, well, my dog understands, and he looks so sad. Like, stop it. You're putting logical human emotion into something that doesn't have logic. It's actually way more simple than that. You're making it way more complicated than it actually has to be.
Yeah, I agree. All right, so you guys are just getting started. You've had your 501c3 status for 3 months, John, is that correct?
Approximately, yeah.
Okay, so what are you guys doing from here? Where are you?
So basically our goal right now is to raise money. And because we have to have that money in order to be able to help people. So we want to get a cushion that obviously we can operate, which we have very, very low operating costs. But we want to be able to help more than one person and put that money where it needs to be. So our goal right now is simply just to raise money. And we're doing that through, we have products on our website. We've got, we're partnered with Amazon Smile. So if you shop through Amazon, you can choose us as your charity and a portion of your purchases goes directly to our foundation. We have multiple local events that we've created, a comedy competition that's coming up in November. Just we're doing everything we can to just raise money.
Okay. And the reason, and back, I want to make sure the audience understands. So here's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but what I'm understanding is, look, it's time for me to find a successor for Skeeter. I know what I need as far as I need a large dog because I need an increasing amount of mobility assistance. And, you know, there's a reason I have a 100-pound service dog. and they're, you know, so breeds obviously are limited. I live in the South now, and it's very unfair to my northern breed dog. I mean, we live in the air conditioning in the house all summer. We're miserable. I mean, it's starting
hardwood floors
now, and we're outside all the time because the Skeeter's comfortable, and I can always put on a jacket, right? So I need a shorter hair
right.
because I'm not going to go where it's cold again. I'm going to stay in warmer climates. So I come to you guys, and I'm like, look, I need to get a new service dog. I need help because – you know, the Mastiff breeders around here, I can't find a puppy for less than $1,200.
So one of the things we want to do as a foundation is create a database of dogs, a database of trainers that we can go back to and refer people to. And in addition to that, we're not just looking at breeders. One of our board members also works at Pound Buddies, which is a local shelter here. And Kaylin has trained her to vet the dogs there to look for candidates that could be good candidates for service dogs. So we're looking at every aspect we can in trying to create this database just for information to help. So even if you don't come to us for a grant to help pay for it, we want to help you find it.
Right, right. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
Well, you guys are located in Michigan. But you're reaching out beyond just the borders of the state, correct?
Absolutely. That is correct. Yeah, our you know we're small and local, but we don't want to be. I'd love nothing more to be a national service because well that's the beauty of electronic transfer and mail. It doesn't and you know I one of the best you know tools that the military gives you is networking. So I've got friends and people that are into dogs all over the country. And being a trainer, I'm part of a lot of groups and stuff like that. So I can go look in California and find a dog, you know, and stuff like that. But another big caveat to a lot of this, and even on the money side, one thing that, you know, John was using GoFundMe, and as good a tool as that is, it's so limited. Because one, people have taken advantage of it and it's shady. Yep. People don't know if people are, you know, if it's a lie or crap or whatever. And then the other side is they take their own stipend out of it. And I hate that. If it's GoFundMe, I don't know why that platform is taking anything for itself, out of money that's donated, and it irritates me. So we want this to be something people can go to in lieu of that, because one of the biggest things is if that veteran is asking for help and has done their homework and they have a dog and they have a trainer they want to use, right? But nobody will give them any money and GoFundMe is taking them six ways from Sunday. That's the last thing I think that veteran should have to worry about is how they're going to come up with that money.
Right, because what we're talking about is saving that veteran's life. What is a veteran's yep. life worth to you?
You know? Exactly.
But and mm-hmm. the bottom line is we're trying to save lives here. We're not trying to get popularity. We're not trying to make the best commercials. We're just trying to save veterans' lives.
Yep.
And that's, and you know, there are three phases to a nonprofit. That's, again, you know, Bart and I, we discuss the industry daily. There are three phases to a nonprofit. A great cause becomes a business, becomes a racket. I think
yeah.
this is my personal yeah. opinion, but right now the service dog industry is on the edge between business and racket. And there are some portions of the service dog industry that are absolutely racket right now.
And that's where our advocacy comes into play.
Yeah. And man, I'm telling you, John, now you approached me for advice about service dog a while
before the foundation even started.
Yeah, it was a while ago, and I gave you the best information I could. Unfortunately, the one organization I know is in Michigan is like 5 miles or 5 years, 5 hours away from you. So that was really a lot of help. So I really like this idea that you're willing to work with veterans, help them find trainers local to them, and give them a grant to pay the trainer to help them train their dog. This is great. Because what you're doing is, and this I think is really key and really important, is you are enabling the veteran by empowering them to take matters into their own hands and build their team and with professional help, build that.
Well, that's
their life.
And that's our three core values that we came up with, was equip, empower, and endure. We equip the veteran with money, dog, knowledge, whatever. We empower them with the money and, you know, means to help themselves, and they endure through their team process.
Yeah, absolutely. That's just fantastic. And you know what? This is one of these, you know, honestly, why didn't I think of this? This is a fantastic idea. I encourage you both to just take this bull and run with it. Take it by the horns. This is an awesome opportunity to change the way specifically PTSD service dogs for veterans work in this country in a positive way. And I really, really like that. And I really like that one of your focuses is, look, 2-year waiting list for, you know, such and such an organization, that ain't going to cut it. Because like you asked, like you said, John, what happens to me while I'm waiting?
Yeah.
You know, I need help now. And that's really,
honestly,
most of the veterans who I interact with who are asking for help are at that point of, look, something's got to change. And it has to change now.
Yep.
And you know what? Those big, quote unquote, service dog training organizations, they can't help me now. I get on a list.
Well,
I'm tired of waiting, you know?
This was the light bulb in my head when it came to the whole industry concept. When we were raising money through GoFundMe for John, and I already had the dog, I was already working him and getting him on the right direction. We were just trying to come up with the funds, you know. I was like, my time is, you know, it's my time, you know. Like, if I know the money's going to be there, I don't care. I'll just go. And it wasn't important to me when that money happened. Mm-hmm. He was putting things out on Facebook, and there's a local veteran here. That got on his page and said, "Hey, I work for an organization that can give you a service dog," and for free, right? And that was his tagline, for free.
Right.
And John responded to him and said, "Well, I already have a dog and I've got a trainer. Can your organization help me with paying for it?" Mm-hmm. He never answered him. Not said no, not, "Hey, let me talk to him," nothing. He just went dead silent.
Well, and again, it goes back to that dog and pony show concept. That doesn't make them look good because they're trying to say that they're the only people who can train dogs. You know,
a lot and at that point, you're not there for the veteran. Yeah. You're there for your organization.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Exactly. It's a racket at that point. You're not there to help the veteran. You're there to help yourselves. And this is, you know, this is something that I keep hammering on this on the PTS Dog page. I've posted about it a couple of times. Ask questions when you're approaching a nonprofit about a service dog. Ask where their money's being spent. You know, some big organizations are spending hundreds of thousands of dollars on breeding programs and facilities.
But those facilities are already there.
Exactly. You can train a dog at Home Depot.
all of our funds go directly to the Yeager Foundation in one way, form, or fashion, either to the savings account for the veteran or for merch or whatever to help to advertise and get the word out there. That's it. You know, did you get a chance to watch our promo video?
I did. And it's a great video. And we'll talk about that more offline.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
I have some suggestions. I want to encourage you guys. I want to help you guys, And you know, one of the things I do is message, and you know, that's, yeah. Well, that's what I do. And so I'd really like to talk with you guys offline, off the air,
yeah.
In the place. But I really want to offer any support I can, because this concept, that, you know what, like I said, why didn't I think of this? Because this is
really right.
This is a head slapper. Duh, you know.
So it's important to understand too that it's not only where we're going right now, but where we want to be in the end. And I want to make sure that the listeners also understand that we also want this to be available for first responders, not just veterans. Because I mean, you don't have to be a military veteran to be a veteran. First responders, fire, police. We want to be a service for them as well. Also, I would love to have, because if somebody in Nevada contacts us, you know, we're going to do everything we can to help. But you cannot understate the value of having boots on ground. So my end goal is to also have different state chapters to where people can go to locally that have their own contacts locally. So you don't have to come to Michigan. You don't have to call Michigan. You can contact there. So that being said, we are absolutely open to the idea of other people that want to be involved in their state to get this started in their local area as well.
That is fantastic. Gentlemen, I am encouraged to see that there are other people in the community who are thinking about the same kind of issues and pointing out the same kind of problems that I'm seeing. And, you know, oftentimes I feel like I'm just out shouting in the wilderness and nobody hears me.
I'll tell you right now, I've actually been a follower of yours for a while. And if I'm not mistaken, there's been a lot of questions I couldn't answer that I knew you could. So I sent a good amount of people your way, at least to your page, to just read some of the stuff you put out, because your content is top notch, and all fact based. So I think I sent John your way, because John asked me some questions. I'm like, I don't know, bro. So hey, but this guy does. So go hit his page up, because everything he does is gold. So yeah, I appreciate you, because there's nobody else doing what you do. Nothing.
You know, that's literally, yeah. Look, I started training skaters, started handling them. And when we started Public Access, one of the things I realized was nobody understands what they're doing out here. Nobody knows the law. Nobody knows their rights.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, some of these large organizations are handing leashes to veterans and don't teach them a thing about their rights at all.
Yep. There's a number of different skills out there that error is the best teacher. This is not one of them.
No,
error is the worst teacher. Error is not something that you want to learn as you go from. You fortunately have benefited from that, you know, because that all depends on the individual. You know, some people will do well from that, but I'm not going to put 90% of people out there and expect that even half of them will end up in the right, on the right path, through just the trial and error method.
Exactly. And ultimately, that's really what it came down to, is look, why don't I know this stuff? I should know this stuff. I'm walking around with this dog in a grocery store and I don't understand, you know, I don't understand why I can't.
Oh man. Well, you're getting, I'm walking around with this dog, and, you know, and I'm sure at first you're, you know, people are like, oh, look, can I pet your dog? You're like, do I be a dick or do I don't be a dick? like, no, you need to be a dick about it, because, that's one of the hardest things for John to do. Like, I can be a dick to him all day, but you know, he can be a dick to me, but being a dick to a total stranger for wanting to pet his dog, he's like, I can't blame him. Look at him. He's gorgeous. You know, like, no, John. Yell at them. I don't care if at the end of the day, if they think, well, that dude's an asshole and I don't want to pet his dog now. Okay, that's a win. That's exactly. when you put something out not too long ago, I said, hey, let's teach people, let's educate people on how to interact with a service dog. Don't. There you go.
Don't.
You don't. You don't interact with them.
I just published a piece about it. In fact, that, you know what, people are all focused on the dog and they're missing the point. It's
not the dog. Yeah, absolutely.
It's the handler. It's about the person. interact with the.
But at the same, you know, and I tell people, and I tell people, my handlers and my teams and stuff, because that's what they are to me. You know, John and Jaeger are my team. You know, I personally invest myself in to all my clients. You know, they're not just money to me. They're my teams. And when they succeed, I succeed. And when they fail, I feel it for them. You know, because I've been there. But I tell them, like, you have to come from it from an understanding that your responsibility is not only to that dog, right? Because of the age that we're in right now and the level, the high, you're visible. You've got a dog in a place that a dog isn't generally supposed to be. You're going to be visible. You're going to be high vis anyways. And then you throw all these patches on, which, you know, it's like they have the opposite effect. Like, ooh, I'm not supposed to touch that, you know, I'm going to go look at it, you know, and looking is almost as bad as touching. Yeah. But you have to understand where they're coming from. And your job is also to educate our job as handlers and as teams out there in the real world, you're outnumbered. You're not going to be out there with like 30 other dog teams where everybody's going to stay away from. You're going to be out there by yourself in the mix and you're in hostile territory. And your job is to educate the public on, hey, you know, now if they get pushing, you know, you get what's the tact, you know, using everything with tact, you know, and you use it at your discretion, the person you're dealing with. But your job is also to educate the public, like, hey, you don't touch service dogs. You know, that's also your job is to teach them how to not interact with dogs.
Yep, absolutely. And you know what? It's look, handlers, there are days when you can't educate. There are days when you just can't handle it. We get that.
We get that.
But when you're able to, if you're able to, please take a minute, do a little educating.
Yep.
Because it doesn't just benefit you. It benefits everyone who comes in after you who handles the service dog. And that's, you know, and look, if you can't, if you're one of those people who you just shut down and you're not able to, there are people out here.
That's okay.
And, you know, like John and like Kaylin, who can help you? Reach out for help.
Yep.
There's support. Support is there. All you have to do is ask for it. We're not out looking for you so we can come support you. Like, oh, hey, I see you have your first dog. Need some support? That's not how it works. You got to come
and
having a problem.
And like you said a few minutes ago, you said, you know, it took you a long time to get to that point, you know? If you're a new handler, if you're out there and you're a new handler to a service dog and you're just trying to find your way, I don't mean that it's your responsibility right now.
Right.
I get that part that may be a lot to ask because you're still just trying to figure out your way, much less have to educate other people. But you do need to stand your ground. You know, you do need to have the confidence. And if you don't and you're trying to figure it out, you need to find somebody like myself or like John that can help you find that confidence to tell that person to back off. You know, you got to find it within yourself to tell it, because ultimately your team efficiency is going to rely on that.
Absolutely.
Because if you're walking out there and you're letting, if you're just being a doormat to people, and that's going to affect your dog, and that's going to affect that dog's ability to do its job for you, which is the whole purpose
totally
of this. So
it's
yep. Yeah. It goes hand in hand. I mean, you can't really have one without the other.
You know, the way I handle it most of the time is, can I pet your dog? I'm sorry, he's working. But, you know,
mm-hmm.
we're done checking out and we're leaving and the mission is complete. If somebody politely comes and asks, at that point when I'm, you know, almost out the door and stuff, if they're polite about it, I'll tell Skeeter to say hello. And it's a command. He does specifically
yep.
that I have trained him to do. And
I like that.
Preach, brother. Preach. Preach, preach, preach. And because you know Skeeter can handle that.
Yeah.
You know that having that social interaction, one, is not only important for the dog, but you understand that it's not going to set him back. But that's because you know your limitations of your own dog,
yeah.
you know? And that comes with time. You're 9 years in, man. You know that dog inside, outside, front ways, and backwards. You know, you have earned that discretion as a team to be able to say that. John and Yeager have not yet.
John. And it is something you build. Absolutely agree.
Yep.
industry. Gentlemen, we're about out of time. I want to thank you. Tell us, where can we find the Jaeger Foundation?
So we have a website, www.thejaegerfoundation.org. You can also find us on Facebook. And those are our big avenues for information, and they both tie into each other.
And once again, for the listeners, right now you're in the fund building, fundraising phase.
Yes.
In order to begin granting, how do you say it? Giving grants.
Yep.
To help veterans to find a dog and to pay for training. And again, the focus being cooperatively training their dog, which is so awesome. And that's just fabulous that you're actually focusing on that. I want to thank you very much for your time. Again, this is John Jacobs and Kalen Pendleton of the Jaeger Foundation. Guys, I'm going to wrap up the show. I want you to stick around for a couple minutes afterwards. You have been listening to the Service Dog Show with PTS Dog right here on DV Radio, WDVR. Don't forget that DV Radio is by veterans for veterans, and there are a lot of shows that you can listen to. One that I'm personally involved in, because I do their engineering, is Frag Out Drag Out, which airs on Friday nights at 9:30 p.m. Eastern. Come listen to Nevermore, Frosty, and Vivi Oink take on issues in the veteran community in a humorous but educational way. And a lot of times just make fun of each other and just have a good time and a good laugh. Thank you very much for listening to us right here on DV Radio, WDVR. I'll be back soon with a new format for the Service Dog Show, PTS Dog. Radio.